This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. Tea. It's what founded our great nation. Tea, a hot cup of which solves every problem for the British, launched a revolution for the American colonists when on December 16, 1773, they hurled 342 chests of tea into Boston Harbor in opposition of the motherland's taxation without representation. Down in Santa Barbara, a very different type of tea has started a very different revolution. Olive leaf tea, by no means new, is making its debut on the Central Coast. So I went up a mountain to check out Steep Echo for a tea party of a very different kind. I wander from the ranch house through the olive groves to the tea leaf processing room to the kitchen for tasting, and this is how it went.
My name is Kimberly Branham, and I am one of the owners, it's a family-owned business, of Bellavaro Olive Orchards. And we produce Steep Echo tea.
There's no way you could grow tea leaves up here.
No.
Right. It's too cold.
It is too cold. So olive leaf tea has been brewed and enjoyed for centuries in the Mediterranean and what was traditionally the Eastern Bloc countries and in Europe. And actually, our largest competitor is out of Australia. So olive leaf tea is not new. This is extremely old.
And can we go see where you start with your tea?
Our property is really on the border of Montecito and Santa Barbara. So depending on where we're walking in the orchards, we'll be either in Montecito or Santa Barbara. Hmm. So we split right in the difference. We are up on Mountain Drive. We are in or on what was William Furl's property. Mountain Drive has had a very rich history in Santa Barbara. So for example, where we're standing was the first banana farm in the country. And we can look over across from us is Parma Park. We border Parma Park. And the Parma family actually had olive orchards.
When her husband Kyle bought the property sight unseen.
And so then he comes back and he says, I think we bought an olive orchard. And I said, I hate olives. And he said, well, I think that's what we have. On the other side of this mountain, you can see some of the very old olive trees that have survived or come back after the fires. Specifically, the tea fire came through here. Because of the old homesteading of William Furl, we actually have access to a water tunnel, and we receive our water from a tunnel that was granted from President Harrison. And so we receive basically free water coming out of the tunnel. There's six users. So most of our orchards are just fed from this natural spring water. As you can see, when you said they don't go in rows, right? We don't do it. We do everything by hand. We do everything in the very traditional method. We put down the nets and rake out the trees. Our olive trees grow on the sides of the mountains. So everything that we're seeing as far as those are all olive trees. We have a little grove of arbequinas. We don't press the arbequinas. We don't use it really for olive tea. They're more of a cross-pollinator. And then the majority of our trees that we're looking at right now are manzanilla trees.
Okay.
And the manzanilla leaf is very good for olive tea.
Okay, how many trees do you have?
We have about 350. We plant our trees where they best thrive. And we have about 8 different specific groves on the property. And my son, who went to the Olive Institute, and my husband went to the Olive Institute up in Davis, they really focus in on these microclimates. We have 5 different weather stations. You'll see we have some trees that are actually blooming right now, and then we have some trees that are actually fruiting. So depending on where you are in the property, it's a very different temperature, wind, and even moisture. In fact, here's my son, Brandon. So Brandon's all into the trees. We were just talking about kind of the 8 different orchards that you have. So you can see the manzanillas, very different trees. These are much older. They're probably about 15 years old. They grow a lot slower than the Kamlalis. This actually has a different climate here than where we were just at.
And we've only walked about 45 seconds.
Exactly. The manzanillas, though, produce a really nice product as far as the leaves. They're a little bit thicker, so they dry nicely. And I'm very particular as far as how we dry the leaves so that they don't get brown. Although the brown does nothing to the taste, it just doesn't look as appealing. And I think that the beauty of the product is very important as well. Now, I will say, there's no difference in taste between an arbequina leaf, a a manzanilla leaf or a kamlali leaf, because I've tried that. I have so many manzanillas, it's just easier to utilize the manzanilla leaf versus the kamlali. The focus, because creating, I don't want to say creating the olive, but letting the olive harvest is much more of an art and a science, where trimming the trees is a byproduct. So the leaf is a byproduct. Mm-hmm. The leaves are always going to be there. There's not a leaf season, but what you don't want to do is to trim the trees or harvest the leaves and in some way inhibit the growth of the olive.
Right. And so right now we're in May. These haven't started to bloom, but some have. When will you be harvesting the olives?
So we harvest the olives in about the October timeframe, depending on when they're ready to harvest.
Okay. And then your husband and your son give you free rein for the leaves after that?
After that. Until you're probably in about February. It doesn't take a giant harvest. There are a lot of leaves.
Yeah.
Because this looks like an endless quantity.
It is. It is. Yeah.
This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. You're listening to Issues and Ideas, and I'm Father Ian, exploring tea made from olive leaves. The next stage was to see how the leaves actually become tea with Kimberly and Kyle of Steep Echo Teas.
This is what we call the center. So it has a wet room and it has a drying room. We bring all of the leaves, like just like bunches of branches and leaves, into the wet room. And you stand and put piles of branches here on this table. And you, by hand, clip off the leaves. Yes, one by one. And there's different ways of doing this, right? It's labor intensive, but it is actually very doable. You then wash the leaves. We are certified organic, so we have to make sure that we do everything precisely. And then they come into the drying room, but you put it on trays. And you put them in the warming so that they don't get any sort of mold because you want them to dry. But you don't want to heat them up because then they turn brown and they're not very appealing to look at. And so really, if you come in here during drying time, you basically have all these tables lined up and there's just leaves just drying naturally.
And what temperature do you dry them at? What's ideal?
Well, we have up here 120 degrees.
For 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah. And then it's just really to let them air dry. But you want to get the moisture out of them and so that they dry very naturally. And you can see where they start to turn kind of like more of a golden. I try to keep as much green as possible. But then you just vacuum seal and then we send them up to a miller. And the miller mills them to the specifications for the tea. For the olive leaves, what's important to me is the quality, the organic certification, and the aesthetics.
Okay, can I smell them?
Oh,
yeah. Please do.
Yeah.
It smells
sweet. Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing?
And when we're drying olive leaves in here, it is amazing.
Yeah, it is sweet. It does have a sweet smell to it. It smells like kind of like, lightly like molasses a little bit.
It does. Mm-hmm. It has a sweetness.
There's other olive leaf on the market, but typically that's harvested as they fall on the ground, and then they just rake them up. So they're dead leaves. They won't have any flavor or any smell. They still have some oleopurin content in it, but they just don't have the beauty or the smell or the taste.
Oleopurin is the same component that's in olive oil. It's what makes olive oil good for you and antioxidants. And the leaves have the same oleopurin as the olive oil does. It just doesn't have the fat. We're working on what to do with all of the branches and limbs. Really, that's what it comes down to as far as this property has such history and we want to farm it in traditional ways, but we also want to make sure that it's sustainable and that we're using all the products from the trees. We can talk about it while I heat the water. I'm in Seattle. I'm grinding leaves. And I'm combining them with peppermint, and then I combine them with lavender and, you know, different herbs that I thought would taste good with this tea. And I even had a friend bring me home some chrysanthemum flowers from China, but I really didn't know what I was doing. Okay, if we're going to create this brand, what is it going to look like and how would it be developed? And so we found a branding team through friends. One morning, it was Halloween, my two branders, Nate and Steve, my husband Kyle and myself, we went to go see James. And James actually is the individual who's the co-packer. James has been in the tea business forever. And so I have these little mason jars of these little blends that I've put together. He's got a lab coat on and everything. And I was scared to death. I had no idea what I was doing. He had a friend with him, Brian. James says, you know, well, what kind of tea is this? And I said, well, it's not really tea. It's olive leaf. And all the guys are kind of sitting away from me, like, because if this guy says this is the stupidest idea he's ever heard, the guys aren't going to, they're like, yes, she's stupid, right? And so they're kind of this whole thing. So Brian, who was just there, James was friends with Brian. Brian said, why didn't we think of that? I don't know how things align of why Brian was there that day and we met, but he had just left Allegra Teas for Whole Foods and where he had developed many of the teas that I drank. Brian became my tea blender, and he's a master blender. And he created all of these for me. It probably took us about a year to really create all the different blends. Each one, except for Ascent, is really focused in on a health benefit, but we don't market it that way. They're beautiful to the eye, how they smell, and then how they taste. But they're not flavored. So they really are a very natural type of a tea. People don't understand olive leaf, or they think I'm making olive tea. And that doesn't sound good, right? it's a hard thing of education, I think, is the most difficult piece of what does olive tea or olive leaf tea taste like? And it tastes to me like a strong green tea if you just drink olive leaf. Our tea bags are biodegradable. James is a stickler on how these things are manufactured. There's no glue. Originally, he fought us on putting the little tag on. He didn't believe in a string, but then more and more of us were requesting for branding purposes for the, so he's very particular. They are derived from cornstarch, so there's no plastics or anything.
This is Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian, about to have a Santa Barbara tea party with Kimberly Branham.
I'm just going to brew up some tea as we talk about it. Ascent is two things. It was actually, it's our daily drinker. So it's just a nice tea. It has the most of the olive leaf. I will tell you, it's the most expensive of the blends to actually create. And the reason being, we do use the whole vanilla bean. And vanilla bean is incredibly expensive, mm-hmm. and sometimes very difficult to source. Ascent, to me, is the easiest way to see the beauty of the olive leaf and kind of taste it in its truest form. But what Brian was trying to do here is create something that or put in ingredients that would somehow elevate but also keep the olive leaf as the key component.
It's the clean taste that I like about tea. Mm-hmm. I don't drink a lot of tea. I lived in England for 14 and a half years
and
probably drank a total of 2.5 cups of tea because I really don't like black tea hot with milk.
Yeah.
If I'm going to have black tea, it's going to be iced tea. And of course, in Britain, they think that's an anathema. But this has that clean taste that I like about tea that I drink. If I drink hot tea, it's either chamomile or red bush, which you're not supposed to call red bush anymore.
Right.
Earl Grey. All plain. No milk, no sugar, no lemon.
Bloom actually is one of our best sellers. It has peppermint, echinacea root, licorice root, thyme, rosemary, and it has a little bit of cranberry flavor. If I get on an airplane, I'm drinking Bloom. It has a very high immune-boosting quotient because of the echinacea and all of the different herbs that are in Bloom. So it is the cold allergy immune-boosting one of the blends. It's also probably our best tea in the summer because of iced tea. Makes a wonderful iced tea and a great Arnold Palmer. In fact, we have a local chef that uses it in their Arnold Palmers.
This is nice.
It is. It's a great tea for traveling. It's a great tea for in the mornings. It's a great tea for getting your voice ready to do exactly what we're doing right now. Hush is our digestive. Hush has a lot of ginger, papaya leaf, all the things that help you digest after a large meal. It has like a maple, and it also has lemon myrtle.
Well, the whole ginger peppermint maple thing gives it kind of this light Indian flavors kind of smell.
It's wonderful with lemon. It's wonderful with honey, like Manuka honey or local honey. And it's really great with Maker's Mark. In one of our boxes that we put together, we actually included a recipe for a hot toddy with Hush because it pairs incredibly well. And then repose is our answer to sleepy time. You know, that afternoon calm or I need to go to sleep. This is your chamomile.
Is there chocolate in here?
No.
Or is that the rose?
It is.
There's this little faint thing of chocolate. Why?
It does kind of smell that. I think it's the chamomile. Yeah, repose is kind of that one that is just such a beautiful smell, beautiful look. But you're right, it still does kind of have a little bit of chocolate. I'm going to have to remember that.
This tastes more like a bolder chamomile. Mm-hmm. It's still got that lightness, that cleanness, that mouthfeel that you want at nighttime, mm-hmm. but it just seems a little bit heartier.
I think it's it's a very traditional ingredient, but that we don't use in the United States very often. That's lindenflower. Over in Europe, it is quite traditional to just drink lindenflower tea. Oh, okay. And I think that provides a little bit more of that. And then the last one that I have here is called Tend. So Brian originally created the first four for me. And then I said, Brian, I would like a blend of tea for when I travel. It's kind of more like a detox. Okay, he didn't like the term detox. But he created this tea, and it has dandelion leaf, and it has lemon myrtle, and it has corn silk and couch grass. But it also has flavors of mango and pomegranate. So it is our answer to a detox tea. It also is great for a summer iced tea. When you taste it, it doesn't taste anything like it smells.
This is nice. This seems kind of like a more macho tea. It's very, neutral's not the right word, but it's, and hearty is not the right word. A little bit more heartier and warmer.
Right. Well, this one has the mango, the pomegranate, couch grass, corn silk, dandelion. It is a traditional and it's a detox tea.
I notice it has stevia in it.
It does. It's the only one that has stevia, and also it has a bit of decaffeinated green tea. Stevia is a sweetener because of the dandelion green, and some of the ingredients could be a bit more tart or bitter, and so we added a bit of stevia. Now, I have to say, I'm really sensitive to stevia. But this one, I don't taste the stevia, because stevia sometimes tastes to me a little chemically, which is kind of ironic. But even when I chew a stevia leaf, it tastes that way with me. But because of the bitterness, we needed something to cut that with a little bit of sweetness. Unfortunately, we lost Brian at the end of 2018. And people have asked me, are you going to create other blends? And I'll have to find a new tea blender. He was just such a wonderful person. And he really cared about everything that he produced. So I'm very lucky that we walked in that day and there he was.
Has it been profitable in these few years that you've been going? Or are you still waiting for that moment?
I'm waiting for that moment. I think mainly because most of our money goes into additional inventory. The thing I can say is that we are seeing steady increases in customers. I think they get on there and they say, what's olive leaf tea? And what's it gonna do for me? And so that's the part that I'm trying to solve on the tea. So what we do, if someone buys a couple of bottles of olive oil, so if you get one bottle, I can't add anything in. But if you get two bottles, at many times I'll just put a couple of bottles in a big box like that. And then it looks sad, and so I add in tea. And we do sell we call it the variety pack, so you get one individual packet of every blend. If you buy one box of tea, I put in a variety pack for free. So just trying to get people to taste it, because I think the product is fantastic, and I know it's healthy for them, so it makes me feel good. But that's my big focus on is the conversion rate and the education.
Where does the name come from?
So it's because they grow on the steep hillsides, and in different places in the orchard, I have these very large wind chimes that make these noises. And so that's where it came from. It was one of the names, Steep Echo, and it came from the hillsides of the property.
The Central Coast never fails in the food and drink area. This ancient tea is simple to make, but labor-intensive, as you might have gathered. If you have your own olive trees, you may want to give tea making a try. or just open an occasion from Steep Echo and have a much less revolutionary tea party of your own. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm playing with food.